get comments from the floor. I don't want to usurp it all from the head of this table. I'd like to have some observations from those of you around the table. Phil? Still, there is, in the sense, I was just going to say, through Sidney and his activities, through the Blaustein Institute. What was that? Oh, well, of course, the ad hoc committee that was functioning pretty well for some period of time, in which we were involving, as you well know, not only lay people from AJC, but lay people outside of AJC. And it was utilized from time to time, I think, very, very effectively. Not that we shouldn't pursue that, but I think this is somewhat different. The nature, let me tell you why I happen to feel this is of some interest. Because of some of the activities I had been involved in, I had become quite friendly and close to several of the Third World, particularly, representatives from time to time. Unfortunately, they've all left by now. But I have found that as a result of that, on occasions when there are issues of considerable interest to us, I was able to contact them and get some very helpful support. Tommy Coe, with whom I became quite friendly many years ago, and as you recall, is the ambassador from Singapore. He's now in Washington. Well, Tommy Coe was outstanding in supporting many of the very important issues that we are involved in. I reminded Ivor Richards the other day of the occasion when Tommy Coe took Richards and several of them apart on the Zionism racism resolution and attacked them all for being hypocrites. This was at a small dinner meeting. There was the ambassador from Ghana. I can go down the list, and there are many of them, and these are opportunities that we have in New York, it seems to me, to be of help in that respect in getting across our point of view and our ideas, and to get some, incidentally, the ignorance on the part of so many of these, well, Phil, you know that better now, and the Human Rights Commission. There are people who came to the Human Rights Commission meetings from many of these Third World countries who had never even read the Declaration, Universal Declaration of Human Rights, till they got there or on the plane on the way up. And I think that there are opportunities to deal with many of these people. On many issues, they are guided simply by their own foreign office. But they do have some input, and you can be of some help and some influence. That's the sort of thing we're talking about here. Yes, Ed?
I think this is historic. I think this proposal provides a rationale for the American Jewish Committee as an organization. A very specific purpose, whereas not any universalist approach at the same time. I feel that we are... perhaps we are too well known for our modesty, and we are not aware ourselves of the significance of our members or our membership. I think the trip to France, without question, opened my eyes, and I should think it opened the eyes of all those who attended that particular meeting. It was awesome that the foreign minister of France, spent 2-3 hours with 5 lay people. One staff person for the American Jewish Committee analyzing France's role in the world today and asking opinion as to our feelings with regard to its significance and the role France should play. I think it was significant that the Cardinal of France met with the American Jewish Committee and asked its opinion on how the Vatican could approach the issue of relationships with Israel. I think we all were astonished that we were the vehicle by which these extraordinary proposals were put out to the world. We have never realized the potential of this organization to operate in that sphere. And for this document, I think, is our realization. And I think that if we don't see it in that perspective, we're really missing the point of the significance of the
Thanks, Ed.
I would like to support what Ed has said. In reflecting on the way we have been received in a variety of places and the kind of image we conjure up among statesmen and so forth, our task seems to be to deserve it. We go, yes, we come in with tremendous billing. The fact was that four presidents of Latin American countries arranged their calendars to see us, sat there and said, quote, we know you are the most important organization in your colony. the most important colony in your country. But this organized approach to it, it serves so many of our purposes. It captures and brings to us people who feel that they can be useful in a function. It helps flesh out to a reality that which our image contains. And I would say that resources directed in this way creates an opportunity for a unique contribution by us on the scene. Eddie, I just have to speak to you.
Please
record. Very well.
Further comments? We'd like to have your opinions of this, because we would like to get some kind of a consensus out of this group as to pursuing this, and any suggestions or ideas as to how we might do so. Bruce?
I have an incomplete thought, and I'm going to put it out that way because I'm not sure I know quite where it leads, but there seems to be a geographical basis of what this is about in New York, reaching out to the UN people, etc. Are we missing the point? Isn't Washington a bit more important than New York when it comes to relationships and international affairs? Aren't the embassies located in Washington and only the consulates in New York? Aren't the embassies in Washington far more important than the UN attendees?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Brookie can comment on that.
That there ought to be a center of gravity on what this is saying, and I certainly agree with both Ed and Maynard. But that sentence is missing, and as I say, I haven't fleshed out the thought of it.
Brookie?
Well, I wish I didn't have to say it, but I think the answer to your question is basically no. The embassies as a collectivity are not more important than the current officials of respective governments, but it also varies from country to country.
New York and
the
UN.
I see. The only obvious point I make is that any work done in New York or in the countries abroad should be coordinated as much as possible with the liaison that we ought to maintain with the embassies. But there's a very uneven quality of embassy and embassy
I'll tell you one distinction. I think it's a valid distinction, and Bookie can correct me if I'm mistaken, that you find that in New York, that many of these representatives who are in New York, they are in a tremendous city. Many of them are really lost and are reaching out for this kind of contact. They want it. They would like it. They will welcome it, and they will participate in it. I don't know that that is as true in Washington. Frankly, they're also, I think, that in Washington, they usually circulate more within their own circles, do they not, within their own diplomatic... I don't know. Let's hear.
Well, first, I want to pull back a bit my first response. I think it could be misunderstood. I think you know that for 17 years I've said one of the areas we're neglecting much too much is the Washington embassy operation. I don't want you to think it. I think it's unimportant, and we ought to try to correct that one. But I misunderstood your question in the first place about relative importance. They're all very important, though.
They're all
very important.
Leon, I just
go ahead.
A quick response. Bruce, I'm glad you raised... We really are talking about, at least as I perceive it, the document here is a first probe. I really see a long-term, comprehensive strategy that is three-tiered. The New York scene is clear in terms of the United Nations that whole front of ambassadors from every country of the world. There is the Washington scene, which we have begun to work on this year. We met with the Spanish Embassy last week to talk about our Spanish mission after the Board Institute. It was extraordinary response we got. Spanish minister asked for a memorandum immediately to send off to the foreign minister to arrange the highest level meeting, and with the king and queen of Spain and the foreign minister and the prime minister when we're ready to go there. But that's the second tier, the whole embassy front, which we're now working on. David Harris has been providing important staff support with Leo, and we've met now with perhaps, eight embassies in Washington. And the responses from all of them have been very open, and we've been able to register a number of our major concerns. The other tier that we haven't talked about, which has, I think, important programmatic significance for us, is that we have begun sending out memoranda with background materials to our chapter presidents around the country on visits to consul generals. That is to say, when we develop a program with regard, for example, combating hostility against Israel and Jews in the United Nations, we provided a background document, chapter and verse, to every chapter chairman and our area offices. Now, probably a half dozen of our chapters already have had meetings with some of their top leadership with local consul generals. And 2 weeks ago, our Atlanta chapter gave us a report. The British consul general in Atlanta said this was the first time that any Jewish group has sought him out in more than a decade of service in Atlanta. Never had any contact with the Jewish community there. And they asked for him to communicate concerns not only about the UN and Soviet Jewry, but also about Nairobi. We've begun now moving on that front with our outlet. So that there is a chance now to really give some chapter involvement in this work that is not simply Mickey Mouse. I mean, there's a chance to impact. And now the consul generals are saying, we now hear from our embassy that you people are stressing this issue, and we're feeding that back to our foreign office. So it seems to me, in terms of our programmatic objectives, our political objectives, moving in this direction, creating a structure that enables us to guide our work both in New York and Washington and in chapters around the country, we've really got a very solid program plan here which can make sense for us. But we have to count on one of the missing pieces here is that, and one of the areas where I think our lay leadership can be enormously helpful to us, not only the steering committee but in chapters around the country, is to undertake a responsibility for identifying people who would become special resources for us. Jewish leadership in local communities who may be involved in commerce or trade or political activity or legal activity or banking activity with foreign governments, who have access in an influential way with governments of various parts of the world. And we need to do that kind of identification and feedback so that we can begin building up each of these commissions and develop a kind of rapid deployment force on given issues where we need people who can have real impact beyond that which we're having now.
Ted and Annette, yes.
Because this is so important, and you've been working at it for almost 8 years now, sequentially, first with Germany, France, quick sally by Howard Freeman to the UK to see what might be done there, the other trips. All of these committees cannot spring into existence at once. Otherwise, they're going to be inevitably some failure. And failure should not attend this kind of effort. What areas are you going to emphasize initially? And what do you see as your next step, in team talk?
My own notion is that I would suggest that since we have made such a good start in Western Europe, that should be our number one, to try to more formalize that effort. We were already a good ways down the road as a result of what's been going on for the last 6 to 8 years in that area. And I think the next area, I speak for myself now because I haven't discussed this with anyone else, is South America, where we've also made a good start. But I agree with you. We've got to take this step by step and not jump into the whole area at one time. Mark, do you have anything to add?
Well, I think Leo's sense of that. Part of it has to do with our analysis of what is happening geopolitically. And one of the reasons we've gone into Europe in this organized way is that the EEC is a central political factor in many of the issues of human rights, international programs against terrorism. Look at the role of the EEC now in Central America, the Contador process. There's developing a self-consciousness now on the part of the 10 countries. They also play a role in the Middle East. France's role with regard to Lebanon and Syria, France's role in Africa. Our concentration, it seems to me, ought to be in the places where we can have the greatest catalytic effect in terms of Jewish interests. At the point at which the détente between the United States and the Soviet Union was at the lowest, the Soviet Union was keeping lines open with the European community, with France, with Germany, with England. And that's one of the reasons we began to move there. We needed other alternatives for trying to have some impact on the Soviet Union outside of what was then locked in the declined relationship. So in part, the decisions will have to be made by that. We may have to make shifts depending on some international changes. But as for the moment, it's clear to us that the European community, the European Parliament on Human Rights, the whole NATO group, are critical factors in terms of the defense of constitutional democracies, upholding human rights, and the defense of the Jewish interests. So we're going to give that primary concentration a systematic way. I think it is a question of priorities, and it does have to do with resources that B is pointing to. And we not only want your bracha, we want you to take a look at the budgetary implications of this. You cannot run this operation with our present limited secretarial staff and limited budget in terms of travel and other things. And while we're talking about a modest increase, it's essential to do this work seriously. You've got to provide the infrastructure that makes it possible. Otherwise, we'll approve of it, we'll give it a blessing, but it won't really be a serious undertaking unless we can staff it in a way that enables us to do the work that needs to be done.
Ed?
I think, Ed, not to be rectified, but suggestion, what you're saying here is the institutionalization of what has been largely a theoretical approach by the American Jewish Committee to the field of foreign affairs. And what we're doing now is twofold. One, we're developing relationships with those with whom we can have an impact. For example, we were talking about the UN mission, the mission to New York or the UN, as opposed to Washington, ambassadorship. Many, indeed, most of those people from New York will eventually be their ambassadors in Washington.
Some will be, foreign affairs.
They will be.
Some of them are ambassadors.
Well, there was certainly some play roles in our foreign ministries.
Some are ambassadors both places, you know.
They all play roles. They would not be in New York City or at the UN if they weren't geared for a more significant role in their government. All right, is that a clarification?
That's better.
All right. and I think this is an extraordinary opportunity because of our base in New York to take advantage of that. Moreover, going back to the trips that we mentioned, we have not been significantly aware of the signal impact of the American Jewish Committee as an organization on many of these people. Perhaps it's good that our reputation, Maynard, is greater than we might feel it should be. But
even though we're calling
that way.
Nevertheless, reality and perception are very important, and we know what the perception is.
All right. Does anyone else have any other comment they would like to make on this subject? Because if not, it seems to me that I've heard nothing that indicates any disagreement with this program and a great deal of support for it in this group here. And so can I assume that it's the feeling of this group that we should pursue this and that we're prepared to support not only the concept, but the necessary wherewithal in which to bring it into effect. Yes, Al.
How do you sound the question? Hasn't already been sounded. This is an area that has great appeal because of the nature of matters that will be given. International affairs, by its nature, is very advanced. It's also somewhat treacherous. There's the potential for our being used in subtle ways that may not be clear to us. I hearken back to our visit to France. Mark, I say this out of ignorance, I'm not sure what the positive effect of a visit like that may be. If that way of example, the French motivation was simply to try to neutralize criticism of Jewish groups in the United States, policy of France to be the principal arm merchant of the Arab world. One way of doing that is to grant access to Jewish groups in the United States, to bring them into a process of discussion, to flatter them by interference, and in the process of that, seek to neutralize what would otherwise be legitimate criticism on the part of American Jewry, France's policy in the Middle East. I feel that's only one example.
Mm-hmm.
My own activities in connection with the Romanian government always presented that same problem. I never knew whether I was persuading them or they were persuading me.
Or both.
Whether in fact they were getting Jewish support for extension of this information treaty status in return for what were paper promises to increase the rights of Jews, numbers of Jews, near Romania and Israel. It's a very, very difficult area, particularly for persons such as ourselves. We're always operating in the most limited databases compared to the person with whom we're discussing these things. We don't have access, and won't have access, to governmental data. The persons we're dealing with have a larger agenda than we do. They know far more about the composition of the world and think the force is operating upon it than we can know from our secondary expansion. Although I don't intend by my comments to discourage what I fear being suggested. Indeed, I think it's good institutionally and could create some very positive results for the Jewish community worldwide. It is imperative, highly sophisticated, and one in which we should proceed with caution, not in terms of trying to extend ourselves, but when we get into these very discussions, we need a high degree of sophistication. And I would suggest that we're going to embark on this market from a staff standpoint. Ought to try to involve, if we can, someone with professional foreign policy experience.
Now, just to comment, Phil wants to speak next. I think what you said is absolutely correct. We were exposed to that in Paris.
I mean, that as an example. I don't have enough knowledge of it.
But, on the other hand, I recall our meeting with Chirac, who is presumably going to be the next president of France, in which he did exactly what you talked about with respect to the Middle East and Iraq and so forth. And I recall very well the discussion led by Howard at that time, which was certainly a clear recognition on our part and an indication to him that we totally disagreed with his whole point of view. Howard did a beautiful job on that score, so much so that he wanted to continue our meeting on for, he'd given us 45 minutes or an hour, but he wanted to continue the meeting, but I think our next meeting was with President Mitterrand and had to leave. And he's coming here after the election. His staff told us that at the time, and he wants to arrange to continue a discussion with us. So that there was clearly a recognition on our part of what they were trying to convey to us, and I think a very effective presentation, particularly by Howard on that subject at that time. But what you say is absolutely true. Is there anyone else who has anything further they want to say about... Oh, Phil, I'm sorry.
You said practically none of us on that meeting was agreed that we could do anything with them. They don't want anything from us. And the sophistication that I'll suggest becomes necessary because of that. But this whole program falls flat on its face if we're looking for us having nothing to do.
Can I just add to that and say, the Minister of Trade and Tourism, we pressed her to attend the media, the economic conference in Israel, which was taking place in a few weeks. She had already requested that we arrange a meeting here for her in New York. It was a result of that pressure that she changed her schedule. She was supposed to go to Mexico, and she did lead a delegation to Israel. When she came to New York, we, in turn, had a very, very good representation for her at AJC in New York. So I think we recognize that it's a double.
I don't think there's any sense, at least on the part of, I think, our leadership of the commission and the staff, the moral ambiguities of all of this and risk factors involved. But you don't go into this business unless you take that into account. I think that we have, I think, as Leo and others have indicated, we had objectives and we achieved some of them even more dramatically than I think we realized at the time. After Madame Cresson, Lawrence Fabius who's now the minister of
Prime Minister
of France, after we made the case that they were isolating Israel by virtue of not attending Israel's economic conference, went on a mission subsequently and began negotiating a whole series of economic trade relations. There is a trade-off, and they do want something from us, and we're very clear about that, and they're very clear about that. But we make it clear that there are negotiations of things that we can do, recognizing our appropriate limited role. We're not the American government. But within that context, there are things that we can do. So I think there's a growing awareness, and as we get more of our experienced and sophisticated lay people involved, we will have greater depth and greater sense of the ambiguities we have to deal with. Leo had to go out. Why don't we just acknowledge some questions? And Howard, do you want to chair our meeting for us? Yes, Barton.
While I certainly agree with the caveat that I laid out, I think maybe sometimes you better differentiate between situations depending on the level that we're at and also the people with whom we're dealing. And I think particularly the opportunity that we've had with the AJC leadership delegation that went into East Berlin and met with the commission with the mandate to head church-state relations. And we met with the American ambassador. What we were told was that even though we did not know what their motivations were, that any contact was important because there was such limited contact. And thought that any contact would be a positive, have a positive result. Obviously, there's a great risk in doing that, but in those kinds of limited situations,
all right, I'm going to assume we have unanimous support for this program unless somebody indicates there. This is a democratic procedure.
Yeah, we, as a matter of course, when any exploration of this kind, check in with the State Department before and after.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
So that's standard.
Oh, yes.
We meet with the area desk, the regional desk, and before we go to any embassy, in fact, just get some sense of what the lay of the land is.
That's what we've been doing on these other meetings.
We can come back and brief the area man in Washington. We should.
From abroad. I don't know what that is.
Sometimes they ask
would
for
it. Would it be appropriate to ask, if we've come in from any one of you, about how this relates to the work and the contemplated work of the World Jewish Congress, to what extent we will be competing with, overlapping, challenging, or do you want to wait some other time for it?
Well, I would suggest, we've only got a half hour left, and I must say that someone's going to have to explain to us what their contemplated work of the American Jewish, of the World Jewish Congress
is.
They
talk about.
I think it is.
I withdraw the question.
No, he wants to respond.
No, I think because it is in the air, and it's a matter of concern and I'm very much concerned about it in terms of when meetings are set up, and our president Howard Friedman meets with Cole. And there's much more prominence given to what Edgar Bronfman does around the country, going around collecting presidents. The problem which we need to acknowledge, because
for you black market, terrifying in your own PR.
That's right, and our own distillery. but the distinction is that it's important for us to understand this. If I think we felt that Edgar Bronfman, the World Jewish Congress, was doing this job with depth and with continuity over a long-range period of time, then I think we would have to ask ourselves the question, why are we going into this? Are we simply competing for institutional interest? In fact, the reality is that, first of all, the World Jewish Congress does not have a constituency in the United States. It has no base in America's political or economic reality, apart from Bronfman's own personal role, which is what is being built on. Secondly, there is no follow-up in depth programmatically with any of these governments. The kinds of things that we've begun to do with Madame Cresson, the kinds of meetings we're preparing to set up with Madame Rodi on human rights and women's rights in Nairobi, we are able to do because we have a constituency and we have a program. There is follow-up in depth, which we've begun. The things we've been doing in Germany, the World Jewish Congress will have a meeting with Kohl, and that's the end of the relationship. But we've had now a decade of exchange programs, of bringing over leadership, of educating people, of publishing textbooks, of meeting the conferences of teachers and political leaders. There is, there is a depth dimension to this, which we bring to this, which is a real contribution.
All right. May I drop this, please. I know we have unanimous approval of this program and support for it, and I just don't want to prolong it. We've got about 20 minutes to go, and because we've got to move into the other room shortly. May I just go back to one item we passed over earlier, and that was on UNESCO. I would like to ask David, you have statements here within prior discussions. I'd like to have David bring you up to date on conversations that he has had with a person of some influence whose name we can't disclose in the State Department, and the last conversation he's had is with, as of this morning, as to recent developments. So David, would you please summarize the...
Okay. You have in your kits the update on UNESCO, which was prepared as of approximately a week ago, and we had thought that it would be the last word prior to the NEC meeting, because the executive board meeting of UNESCO in Paris was just finishing at the toward the end of October, and we were afraid we would not have an analysis of what happened there. As you'll recall, for those who attended the last steering committee meeting and the Board of Governors meeting, the recommendation was made that we postpone any action on UNESCO until such time as we had a clearer picture of what happened at the executive board meeting in Paris. And as Leo said, as recently as this morning, I was in touch with a friend at the State Department who's been intimately involved and who was in Paris and who gave us the following balance sheet. He said the picture was mixed. On the positive side of the ledger, and let me run through some of the things briefly, it really ought to be Sidney Laskowski who gives this report, because I'm somewhat newer to the language, but the notes are in front of me, so let me give it. Firstly, he said that there was a recommendation for a zero-growth budget in UNESCO, which is an important issue for the United States, although there was also provision for as much as a 2% increase in third world programming, which is of some potential concern to the United States, not for the implications of third world programming per se, but rather for the fact that it would again perhaps increase a budget which the United States is anxious to contain. Secondly, the recommendations of the temporary committee were approved en masse, although without implementation mechanisms. One of the important issues addressed was the issue of what is euphemistically referred to as complex issues, quotation marks, which really reads as contentious issues and how they're dealt with at UNESCO. And it was agreed that contentious issues could be referred to a special committee of the board to take them out of the full executive board, and in this way, perhaps, as the United States sees it, to either contain or in some cases perhaps sidetrack those complex or contentious issues. But a further U.S. proposal to have as few as 5 members of the executive board succeed in making this recommendation was turned down, which leaves, therefore, the need for a majority to refer a contentious issue from the full board to a special part of the board. There was an omnibus resolution passed with respect to guidelines for programming for consideration by the Director General in the 1986 and 1987 program years. And unlike previous such resolutions, this one contained no references to national liberation movements and no reference to the New World Economic Order. And although the language was far from perfect from a U.S. viewpoint, it was still characterized as more concrete, more training and technical oriented, more within the scope of UNESCO's mandate, and less ideological than previous such resolutions. Further, the reforms proposed by the Director General, which was an outgrowth, as you'll recall, of the 5 working committees which had been created with respect to such issues as management and personnel, which are themselves contentious issues for all of us, was also approved. Additionally, the life of the temporary committee was extended for another year to deal not just with program suggestions and recommendations, but also with methods for implementation, which is another key U.S. demand. Of specific concern and interest to all of us, in a gesture to the Jewish community, the 850th birthday of Maimonides, to be commemorated next year, was officially designated as a UNESCO commemoration, although it was also noted that the Soviets objected to reference to Maimonides as a mystic, saying that there is no room for mystics within the mandate of UNESCO, and so the reference was changed from mystic to thinker in describing Maimonides. Further, with respect to Middle East resolutions, which have often been a point of contention in UNESCO and of concern to us, it was described to me that they were resolved this time more amicably than in previous years. There were two resolutions. One was postponed until next year for consideration, and the other was described as, quote, so mild that the U.S. joined with only minor reservations expressed. And it was noted, too, that the Israelis were pleased with the outcome with respect to consideration of Middle East issues at this executive board session. With respect to another area of concern of ours, the human rights complaint mechanism, which Sidney Laskovsky has been so involved with, we were concerned that the Soviet efforts to sap the human rights mechanism might succeed. In fact, approval for its continued existence, at least through 1987, was given as a recommendation by the executive board despite Soviet objections. The list of positive results goes on. Let me briefly give some of the more negative results as seen by our State Department. As indicated earlier, there was some concern about the prospect of a 2% growth in the budget for third world programming, and there was concern that the seven U.S. resolutions which were intended for a submittal were in not one case passed. Of the seven, two were considered particularly important by the United States, one with respect to the budget and one with respect to protecting minority rights, that is, the minority within the UNESCO Executive Board. In all seven cases, the resolutions were not passed. Additionally, a Nordic resolution originally proposed by Iceland, but with full U.S. support with respect to the urgent need for some kind of prioritization of programming at UNESCO was also not fully considered and of some concern, therefore, to the U.S. The GAO report of the United States was not accepted for consideration by UNESCO because of a procedural motion on a technicality that it was in draft form rather than final form. This too troubled the United States. In describing the attitude of Mr. Mbo, the Director General of UNESCO, we were told that he was at times petulant with respect to U.S. proposals, at other times cryptic, at still other times even helpful, especially in trying to contain the third world to accept a zero growth budget. But on the whole, he didn't seem to play a particularly important role, it seems, not wanting to make himself the issue at the executive board meeting. We were told that from our allies, some of whom, as you'll recall, specifically Great Britain, Denmark, the Netherlands, and West Germany, who themselves had written letters about certain aspects of UNESCO procedure, there was some support. On the whole, it was mixed support. The Israelis themselves were not on the executive board. They were there as observers, and we don't have a full reading yet from the Israelis on their reaction to the meeting. In sum, it was clear from this discussion that the decision on UNESCO will be made sometime between November the 7th and December the 31st. It was clear from the